Well, the rate of autism among the general population is reported to be 1 in 110, which is just simply to say, if there are 110 of us in the room, one of us will have autism. The rate of autism among Chicago's Home First Health Services population of 30,000 patients is reported to be 0, which means if there are 30,000 of us in the room, none of us have autism. And so today we pause to ask, why do we have autism and they don't?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 694th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along on the radio page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, when it comes to vaccination, I have had them all, or so it seems. From very early childhood, when the parents happily held up my bare butt for the nurse's needle, to the assembly line air gun shots into the arm as the U.S. Navy welcomed me to foreign ports, to the vaccination cards laden with protection for my trips to Egypt or to the headwaters of the Amazon or to who knows where, to protection from all those yearly flus manufactured in a garage on the outskirts of Kowloon. I have willingly or not lined up for every vaccination. In fact, my blood now contains enough mercury-laden thimerosal to preserve me for probably 500 years or so. And so imagine my surprise when I ran into journalist Dan Olmsted's Amish autism anomaly way back there in Food Chain Radio show number 662. And what Olmsted discovered was that whereas we in the general population have a rate of autism of 1 in 110, the Amish who do not vaccinate have a rate of 1 in 15,000. Then I heard of another autism anomaly, this in the population of the 30,000 patients of Chicago's Home First Health Services. And so once again we ask, why do we have autism and they don't? And who better to ask than Dr. Meir Eisenstein, who's the director of Home First Health Services in Chicago. Dr. Meir, welcome to the Food Chain.
Oh, welcome, Michael. It's interesting, until Dan Olmsted called me 3-4 years ago, it wasn't something that I even thought about. I mean, we delivered babies at home. We helped the women who nursed their children. We didn't administer vaccines. The autism thing wasn't even on our radar until he pointed it out.
Oh, so he said, what about you?
Right, because he heard about for other patients, and then I asked my partners. I've got three partners who have been with me for more than 25 years, and they said, something? We virtually have no cases, And we said virtually because we surely don't know every single person who's left us, gone somewhere else. And the most interesting thing, Michael, is that I have made that statement now for 4 years, hoping to smoke out the hundreds and hundreds of children that should be afflicted by this horrible, and I don't call it autism, because autism is maybe 1 in 10,000 when I started in practice. I call this vaccine-induced neurological damage. And until someone could show me something different, autism, when I started in practice, were these children who later became adults who just, they were wired different. They were absolutely brilliant in other areas but couldn't function socially. In fact, if anyone saw an incredibly great a movie about the life of Dr. Temple Grandin. She has autism. She's a scholar in veterinary medicine. Absolutely brilliant, but she's wired different. And it was an incredible HBO special. But that's real autism. Not these children who can't speak, who are uncontrollable, who are locked within themselves, will never really function at all. And there's some great treatment, but the treatment really minimally helps for the most part. We have the best treatment in the world. No vaccines, no autism.
Well, that's a statement for sure, and I'm sure that that kind of statement raises some ire in the medical establishment. But first, let me paint a picture, if we can, of Home First Health Services. When you say Home First, you're kind of talking literally there, aren't you?
Literally, that's right. I mean, we've delivered almost 20,000 babies at home. Since 1973, myself and my partners, and the vaccines weren't really an issue. I mean, the issue with us was home birth, breastfeeding, minimal pharmaceuticals, and we always gave patients choice about vaccines, even back in 1973. But more and more, the choice become that virtually 100% of our patients no longer give vaccines, and we officially, in a couple of weeks, will not give vaccines even if you want them. It's kind of like one of these things that just died out by itself over the last mm-hmm. few years.
So you kind of attract an Amish-like population of patients.
That's exactly right. And so it's possible that we have a unique population, and if we attract you, you don't have certain illnesses, but it's more than just autism. Asthma, allergy, peanut allergies, eczema, diabetes, all are minuscule within our childhood population.
And almost endemic throughout the rest of the population.
Absolutely endemic in the country, you know. But I could tell you that I'm a very blessed man. I have 6 children and 10 grandchildren, an incredibly awesome wife. When I was a third-year medical student, I found nothing in medicine that interested me, and I was going to drop out, but I wasn't sure what I was going to do if I dropped out. And then I met Dr. Robert Mendelson. Dr. Mendelson was the former national medical director of Head Start, and when he left Head Start, he came to the University of Illinois, and I took his class, and that was the last day I had no interest in medicine. He was one of the most brilliant people. He passed away about 20 years ago. He wrote 3 or 4 books. One of his books were How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor. And, of course, he was the doctor to all my children. And when he left Head Start, he was starting to question vaccines. That's back in 71. And by 73, he had given up on all vaccines. And he made the statement, all vaccines cause neurological damage, and there's never been one vaccine that's been shown to eradicate any childhood disease. And he would make the argument that if you think vaccines have done it, just take a look at the curves of the disappearance of diseases like polio and diphtheria mm-hmm. and whooping cough. Take a look at tuberculosis, tularemia.
Are you saying that it was not the vaccines?
Nothing to do with the vaccine, because then how do you explain the disappearance of tuberculosis, where in this country we do not receive a vaccine? How do you explain the disappearance of scarlet fever? How do you explain tularemia? How do you explain black plague? None of them we have vaccines for, and those disappeared by themselves. And he said a more plausible theory is that certain diseases have certain periodicity and where they come, and like polio was only in the 30s and 50s. It didn't exist in the 1920s and 1910s, and that's Roosevelt got it in the 30s, and we remember because we were born in this era mm-hmm. of the 1950s, you know. But the countries that didn't have aggressive polio vaccines, polio died out in those countries just as well as it did
that's an interesting assertion, because I always heard it was the polio vaccine that got rid of polio throughout the world.
Well, it was the money that was put into the March of Dimes, you know, that promoted that. You know, it's, and interesting enough, when you would think that once their so-called quote campaign was over, now they just move on to other stuff. I mean, this is political. It has nothing to do with. In this country, we gave the Salk vaccine first. That was the injectable vaccine. It never worked. The first 1,000 children that came down with it, and I'm using a number roughly, all came down with polio because it was supposed to be an inactivated vaccine, but it had live polio virus. So President Eisenhower and his administration, very similar to this administration, so I don't take a favorite, Democrats or Republicans, decided that the public should know about this, so they diluted the vaccine 1,000-fold. So everyone who got Salk vaccine in 55 or so just received pure water. And then,
really?
Then shortly afterwards, it all went to the sugar cube, which was the Sabin vaccine. And you say, well, why didn't we give the Sabin vaccine before? Well, the reason was Salk was an incredibly brilliant speaker, like the president, but his research wasn't good. Sabin was a poor speaker, so the March of Dimes went with Salk in order to convince the public. And Russia went with Sabin. And so Russia, you know, was giving a vaccine that worked better in a sense. I mean, and you know what? So let's even assume the polio vaccine worked. Let's take that assumption. Fine, I agree, but the polio doesn't exist anymore. Explain to me a hepatitis B vaccine. This is a vaccine for a sexually transmitted disease.
Okay, hold that. Okay, we'll come back to Hep B right after this break. Folks, we're talking with Dr. Meyer Eisenstein, Director of Home First Health Services. We're asking the question, why do we have autism and they don't? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, we have autism. 1 in 110 of us have autism, but they don't. Why? What is the reason? We're talking with Dr. Meyer Eisenstein, and we're trying to find out. He's the director of Home First Health Services in Chicago, has a population of 30-some thousand patients, none of which can be found to have autism. Now, that's incredible. Why is that, Dr. Eisenstein?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer. You know, I'm a statistician. That was my undergraduate degree. And the statement always made in statistics is correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation.
Right.
I know, and so it's possible there's some other factor that's causing this a very low to non-existent rate of autism, ADD, ADHD, diabetes in children. But it's becoming more and more obvious that the one major change in our society has been the inordinate increase in number of vaccines. When you were young, Michael, you weren't given 60 vaccines in 2 years.
Is that what they're doing now?
Yeah, they're giving the list of vaccines is just extraordinary. Three hepatitis B vaccines. I just alluded to that in the last segment. Hepatitis B is a sexually transmitted disease.
And we're inoculating children?
Newborns on the first day of life get their first hepatitis B vaccine. I have just protested. I'm also an attorney, and I've testified in the Illinois Department of Public Health meeting when they were about to mandate the hepatitis B vaccine. And I said, what are you doing giving one-day-old baby a vaccine that's caused by it's a sexually transmitted disease? See, they've spread the concept of vaccines that are transmitted from one person to the other by infection, like flu and measles and mumps, and they've stretched it now to sexually transmitted diseases. You know, it's kind of like it's become such a huge profit margin to come out with vaccines. It is the cornerstone of the pharmaceutical industry and their profits. And, you know, I don't care if someone makes profit. I am a capitalist. But don't kill me on the way to the profit. You know, that's all I care about, you know.
Well, let's go back. Let me pick up the autism thing again, because
sure.
That's kind of what I'm trying to work
ahead.
It.
No,
and it works right into with what you're saying. The medical establishment says autism is a genetic disorder of some kind that they really don't understand.
No, they go better. They say they have no clue, but it's not vaccines. You know, when the last time I took an English class, when you say you have no clue, that means you have no clue. You can't say, I won't go out with any girl except that girl. That means you're going out with that girl.
There you go. And so what does Dr. Eisenstein say when he looks at the incidence of... It's reported to be 1 in 78 boys now are suffering from autism. What does Dr. Eisenstein... I mean, do you look at vaccines and say, look, folks, look at what this is?
Well, you started off very beautifully, Michael, by talking about one of the hundreds of different things in our vaccines that may be causing the problem. Mercury. You're not allowed to eat it in the fish. If a light bulb that has mercury, those new light bulbs, falls on the floor, you've got to call a hazmat team to clean it up. You've got to cut out the carpeting that's around it and throw it out. You know, what am I missing? You know, you can, and I have a picture that I show from the internet of a pregnant woman who is not allowed to eat the fish because it's got too much mercury.
That's true.
But she's allowed to take a swine flu vaccine or a seasonal flu vaccine that's got more mercury than the fish. It makes no sense. And mercury is only one of the toxic ingredients that are in vaccines. It makes no sense. You know,
Let's go to the Amish. You know, when I talked with Dan Olmsted in the situation where there's only 1 in 15,000 Amish with autism, you look at that and you say, well, the Amish don't vaccinate their children, but the Amish don't do a lot of other things, too. They don't eat bad food. They don't...
grow their own food, right?
Yeah, they grow their own food. They're not subject to the modern time stresses that we put ourselves through. They don't, you know, live in toxic clouds of industrial wastes. So there's a lot of other things that the Amish don't do that we do. And your population seems to be a health-directed kind of thinking people that they would actually want to have their babies at home.
That is exactly right. And we have way more people who come to us, families who don't have their babies at home or had their babies at home, who come to us afterwards. You know, there's no doubt about it. We have a healthier group of families. You know, they're careful about the labels on the food. When they became aware of the dangers of high fructose corn syrup, none of the families I know would even think about it. In fact, we wanted to get a treat of ice cream for, I have 10 grandkids, and we were all together on vacation a few weeks ago. So we went to the grocery store. We're in Orlando. We went through every single container of ice cream. We couldn't find one that didn't have high fructose corn syrup in it. And it's interesting. All the kids said, you know, Dad, and you know, Grandpa, we don't need it. So what? I was so proud of them in a sense because, you know.
It's an interesting image to conjure up. Here's Grandpa with 10 grandkids going through the ice cream looking for one with.
Couldn't find one. I thought Ben and Jerry's. I thought Godiva. I thought, you know, and I don't eat ice cream. I couldn't find one. You know, I mean, it's frightening. I mean that's a whole separate issue in itself.
It's a separate issue, but it is related in that you're working with a population of people who are very health conscious, and perhaps out here in the general population we're not so health conscious.
So I can tell you something.
That still does not identify for me, at any rate, the tremendous numbers, the difference in numbers. Whereas if it's a genetic disorder, as the medical establishment is hinting at or demanding we accept, then there should be some people with autism in your community.
Well, I tell you why it cannot be a genetic disorder. Genetic disorders don't multiply rapidly in one or two generations. You know, that doesn't happen. You know, it doesn't work that way. I mean, therefore, their whole genetic theory is totally wrong. So now they're starting, some of the scientists are saying it's environmental, you know, and they're using that as a cornerstone to get into passing environmental legislation, mm-hmm. which will be a detrimental to us, all of us, even though they really aren't environmentalists. They're really politicians disguised as environmentalists.
Well, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Oh, my God, yeah. My good friend here from Chicago, what's his name?
Rahm Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel. You know, by the way, Rahm Emanuel's dad is a pediatrician and an exceptionally lovely person. I don't know how he had children that are so misguided, both him and his brother. I mean, his brother's even more misguided than him, Ezekiel Emanuel. But let's get back here. Asthma. Let's take asthma. Why do I say asthma? Because I have better information on asthma. We have virtually no asthma in the practice. It's running.
Wait a minute. You have a population of 30,000 people, and
virtually no asthma.
No asthma?
Virtually no. We have some cases. Virtually. Mm-hmm. We should have there at 12% of the population. We should have 4,500 cases. And I speak yearly. They don't exist anymore. The La Leche League International, that's the organization of women who breastfed their children. And the organization is disbanded into little groups. But I spoke for at least 5 years in the last 10 years at their national convention. And they'd always give me the same topic, breastfeeding and asthma. And they would always have 50 or 60 women who ate raw milk. They didn't eat high fructose corn syrup. They nursed their children. You know, they did everything right. They had children with severe asthma. And up for a while, I wasn't able to put it together until I saw a study in Australia about 4 or 5 years ago. It wasn't a conclusive study. They looked at four variables, breastfed and vaccinated, breastfed and unvaccinated, bottle fed and vaccinated, bottle fed and unvaccinated. So they looked at four groups.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was they didn't define their variables well enough, but it's still interesting to look at their findings. They were very staunchly pro breastfeeding organization. Number one, as far as respiratory illness, they didn't define respiratory illness well enough.
Wait a minute. Hold that.
I'll hold the thought on that.
Hold that. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Asthma. Why? Right back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Dr. Meyer Eisenstein. Why do we have autism and they don't? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phones and join us. We have it. They don't. Why? They are the populations of the Amish and those of the Home First healthcare system in Chicago. They just don't have it. And we do, to the extent of young boys, 1 in 78. What an incredible disparity in numbers. Dr. Eisenstein, you said you majored in your undergraduate study was in statistics. Isn't that an incredible statistic?
Absolutely incredible. I mean, now once again, correlation doesn't mean causation.
Right.
But it's really the statistical probability of having a population of 30,000 and having no autism is virtually zero. I mean, it's like if you have, let even take 1 in 100, you can take 1 in 200. At 1 in 100, you would expect 300 cases. And so one of the arguments that I've heard people say, well, Dr. Eisenstein doesn't recognize autism. His partners don't recognize autism. Well, you know, you've got to really be. This is such a devastating disease. And I believe it's a disease. It's a vaccine-induced disease. You know, it's the idea of not recognizing it is absurd. You know.
Well, they say that you don't see it.
Yeah, that we don't see it. We don't see children at 4 years of age or 5 years of age who aren't talking, who are still making their pants, who are uncontrollable or socially unadaptable. We don't see it. Only the school teachers see it. We don't see it. You know.
The
school teachers don't see it because these children don't even get into the regular school system. The growing—I'm going to get back to the asthma because I think.
Yeah, let's go back to Australia. Yep. And
Australia. So to recap it, they did a study. They looked at groups of people, breastfed and vaccinated, breastfed and unvaccinated, bottle-fed and vaccinated, bottle-fed and unvaccinated, four groups. They were looking at a respiratory illness in these children. Well, the one that had the least amount, you would surely expect it, breastfed and unvaccinated. That would make the most sense. What shocked them was the second finding. What was the second lowest number of respiratory illnesses? That was bottle-fed and not vaccinated, which means for all the years that I felt that breastfeeding was the ultimate of having a healthy immune system and lowering your probability of so many things, may be true, but it could be overshadowed by vaccines. You know, and we reconfirmed that in a sense. It wasn't a large enough study to be statistically significant. It just points you in the direction you should look at. But I'm also the assistant medical director for the Blue Cross HMO here in Chicago, for the Alternative Medicine Group. And I got called in by Blue Cross a couple of years ago. They wanted to know, we had something like 1,000 or 1,200 children in this group. And there was one or two cases of asthma, where asthma was one of the leading causes of expenses in Blue Cross here in Illinois and around the country. They said, from your numbers, you would expect 100-plus cases. They had a very good definition of asthma. One is two emergency room visits for any respiratory illness in 1 year, or one hospitalization for any respiratory illness. The reason for that is because what one doctor calls asthma, another doctor may call bronchitis,
right,
a bad cold. But you can't argue going to the emergency room for respiratory illness or being hospitalized. We had one case out of 1,200 children. And so I said, well, come on, it's so obvious, Blue Cross people. We are better doctors than all the other doctors you have. And I'm friendly with a lot of the people there, and they says, come on, Dr. Eisenstein, we know the reason. And I said, well, why don't you tell me? He says, we know the reason. None of these children are vaccinated, and they also had all the records of all the children. And so...
And this is something that Blue Cross... Well, who would recognize that faster than Blue Cross, right?
Because they have all the data. Because in the HMO, it's very tightly controlled. All the records are controlled. There are studies that are done every year, and the percentage of children are vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And we always are proud to say we have zero in that group.
Well, you know, it seems to me like you're going up against one of the biggest chunks of money power on Earth, which is...
No, not one of the biggest. The biggest, because thanks to our Congress, back about 15 years ago, they gave total immunity to the drug companies. They have no liability for any damage caused by any vaccine.
Oh, really? So
yeah, they're total immunity, you know. And I said, this is stupid. If they don't cause any problems, why would you have to get immunity, you know? And so you can't sue a drug company if you have a vaccine reaction. It's sent to a board, a vaccine injury compensation board, and to date they've handed out over $2 billion to parents who've been children injured by vaccines, and they say that that's, you can ask Dan Olmsted, he knows better than I do because he was tracking that, only 1/10 to 1/20 of the cases ever get heard, because if they heard all the cases, they would open the floodgates to how many children have been injured by vaccines.
So there's no liability. They can essentially do whatever they want. Now, you must be a very popular person among the medical establishment. When I put out a press release that I was going to feature you on the Food Chain, of course, I got a lot of people saying, hey, this Dr. Eisenstein is a very dangerous character, and he sent me a link to the Chicago Tribune.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Tribune loves me. You know, dubious doctor. That's what my wife said. They call me a dubious doctor. Yeah, maybe I am dubious. You know, at least I protected my partners from being dubious also.
So in looking at this, doctor, can you think of any other reason why there would be such a disparity in the numbers? I mean, vaccinations is the obvious one, but can you think of any other thing that might be leading us to these incredible differences?
No, because, you know, I can't see anything. But forget about autism, because that's still, 1 in 100 is still rare, in a sense. 1 in 12 is not rare when it comes to asthma. I mean, peanut allergy. We have virtually no peanut allergy in our practice. I really thought it was because of breastfed, because we have a virtually 100% breastfed population. But then again, we start finding people, not in our practice, but outside, who had peanut allergies, and they were totally breastfed.
Did you start off as being a anti-vaccination doctor?
Well, I'm not anti-vaccination. I'm anti-pseudoscience, you know, because, you know, as I started off saying that I'm a student of the late Dr. Robert Mendelsohn, and I met him when I was a third-year medical student.
Right, right.
And anyone who wants to go back and really look at history, here was a doctor who was about 100 years ahead of his time. He was the one who really influenced my wife and I into home birth, into breastfeeding. He also was the one who influenced us about not giving vaccines to our children, and that kind of really just set the stage for what was going to happen in my practice. I really didn't think I was going to practice medicine this long. I've enjoyed myself immensely. I mean, just incredibly immensely. You know,
does going up against the medical establishment, is that part of your enjoyment?
No, you know what? I really don't even do that because, you know, I'm not even part of that. We almost have our own
world.
Niche. What's growing now among doctors are organizations like the American Academy of Anti-Aging Physicians. And these are doctors who are looking beyond giving pharmaceuticals to treat people, but looking at more natural ways of doing it. And I've been a speaker at their organization for the last 5 years, mainly on vitamin D and vaccines. And so I associate only with people, for all practicality, who share my views or can help educate me into more ways of natural medicine.
So you don't go up against them just simply by not working with them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, and you know, it's kind of interesting. One of the things that, unrelated to this, but maybe you're right, it took a big stress on me, and I put on over 100 pounds since I started practicing medicine, and I've lost over 100 pounds this last year using something called the HCG protocol, something that I looked into for a long time, and it's one of the things that become part of our practice. This has been amazing. HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin. Take a look. Google HCG and look at some of the stuff, you know, that's there. And and you can go on my website, homefirst.com. But I want to stay with vaccines right now. Two things I think is important.
Okay, hold on. We're just going to go to a break. And
great.
We have Scott. Scott, can you hold on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Scott will hold on through the break, and then we'll come back and pick up Dr. Meyer Eisenstein. We're having way too much fun here. The question today on the table is, why do we have autism and they don't? The disparity in the numbers is incredible. There has to be some reason. What is it? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain. We have Dr. Meyer Eisenstein and you. Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Dr. Meyer Eisenstein. Doctor, would you like to finish up that point?
Yeah, I'd like to finish up the point.
Yep.
You know, and maybe just to mention the Tribune article. This is the same Tribune which wrote articles about the dangers of mercury in cosmetics, but yet had no problem recommending the flu vaccine to everyone last year, which was laced with mercury. But two things. I've written two books. Don't vaccinate before you educate, and make an informed vaccine decision. And there are on special. You can go to our website, homefirst.com. But you don't even have to, and you can click on the link to the books. But I also run a vaccine webinar series, and I just did a webinar. They're all complimentary. How to write a valid vaccine waiver. And the archive is right on our front page. But coming up in a couple of days, August 22nd, that's Sunday evening, at 7 p.m. Central Time, so that would be 5 o'clock Pacific Time, it's how to write a valid vaccine waiver questions and answers. I got hundreds of questions, you know, because, Michael, see, we have another issue. So you've decided not to vaccinate. Let's say you made that decision. How do you get your children to school? How do you go to professional school? And I've addressed as many of those issues as possible.
Wow.
And there are definitely issues, you know. So the Make Informed Vaccine Decision book, which just came out a few months ago, that goes into every one of the vaccines, their benefits, their side effects.
Mm-hmm.
The Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate spends about half the book on how to legally avoid vaccines.
Good enough. Thank you very much. Let's go to Scott. Folks, you can join us as Scott is joining us by picking up your phone and dialing 800-624-2665 or 831-479-1080. Scott, welcome to the Food Chain.
Why, thank you, Michael. This is a great show. Thank you, Dr. Einstein.
Thank you.
Yes, that fund you mentioned about for damage to children actually saved my family. The state position is that it was neglected. I didn't immunize my children. I have six children, and we immunized against tetanus because she stepped on a tack, and she was severely damaged, physically. And the other children were much healthier. So we had to fight that in court, and that was the winning argument, that they have a fund. There were reams of information on the judge's desk from both sides. We actually set precedent, and we were allowed not to have to immunize our children. But I think what people need to realize is that this is part of a larger agenda where they're trying to damage and destroy Americans and people of the world by a cultist in position of great power and influence to worship an owl god of the Bohemian Grove because it can see in the dark. Unlike good people who engage in mutual beneficial relationships, these people get power from removing our freedom. And the darkness is health and morals and our minds.
Okay,
I actually agree with Scott because I tell you why. I mean, let's look at this. I urge everyone, read the literature on flu vaccine, if not my books and other books. How could they make two statements? One, the flu vaccine was not effective last year, the year before your report, and now essentially try to force people to take the flu vaccine again this year. I mean, it's just the vaccine that's never worked.
Salvation is in God. We break the one cog in the wheel, and the wheel comes to a stop.
You're absolutely right. I agree.
Thank you for the call, Scott. That was pretty amazing stuff. And
yeah. Let me tell you, Michael, I really do believe that because it comes down to it. Almost all people who come to us are people of faith, be they Jewish, Christian, Muslim.
As are the Amish, right?
As are the Amish. And you know, one more thing interesting. How many cases of tetanus have we seen in the Amish? This business of stepping on a rusty nail, the same nonsense I was fed in medical school. The Amish cut themselves all the time. They use primitive tools to farm, and yet I haven't heard of one case. The reason I know there's no cases is you could be sure that the medical establishment would publish that case in the Chicago Tribune and every newspaper they can about this one case. Yet here we go, vaccinating millions of people against a disease. I can tell you what vaccines are like. The little boy who snaps his fingers, and they say, why are you snapping your fingers? To keep the pink elephants away. There are no pink elephants. He says, you see?
It works.
It works.
Okay, we got a whole bunch of phone calls, so we're going to take a quick break here, but when we get back, we'll pick them up. My question, as a journalist, I've trained myself not to believe anybody, especially the people with whom I agree. So my question to you is, why no studies? Why no scientific studies of this incredible disparity?
Very easy, and I'll give you that in 30 seconds.
And we will pick it
Money.
Up. We'll pick it up when we come back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, do stay tuned. Well, the situation is that we have autism and they don't. And so why are there no objective scientific studies to look into this incredible disparity in numbers and provide some answers? Dr. Eisenstein, why not?
Well, first of all, the cost of doing studies like this is astronomical. You have to at least look at thousands and thousands of children, thousands of charts,
right,
and verify them. The only people who have the money for them are the drug companies. So it's kind of a catch-22. They're the only ones who could do the studies. So with rare exception, in fact, if you look at some of the, there's been measles and mumps outbreak in the country the last few years. Very interesting when they looked at it. Over 90% of the children who came down with measles and mumps over the last few years were totally vaccinated. So it's very interesting. The author of the study, this was in the Journal of the AMA about 2 years ago, he recommended that we give a third measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. Before the article even appeared, they had to disclose JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, had disclosed that the author now worked for Merck Sharp & Dohme, the maker of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine.
There you go.
Now, I don't believe that they paid him. I believe what happened was, you do something favorable to the drug companies, you will get rewarded by the drug company.
Sure, scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah, I in Illinois tried very hard to get legislation that if you were in any government position to enforce any rules of vaccines for children or adults, you could not take a position with any pharmaceutical industry for a minimum of 5 years. And it didn't get anywhere.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Let's go quickly to Rory. Rory, you got a question? Thank you for tuning in, by the way.
Thanks for taking my call. We had a Red Cross CPR trainer a couple of years back that was a paramedic, and he contracted whooping cough as an adult here in Santa Cruz County. Said it made him really sick and everything. But it reminded me, and maybe your guest could comment on it, that vaccines do not confirm lifelong immunity. And a lot of people overlook that, and that's something that you need to ask your pediatrician if you're having a challenge. And we've done the religious exemption and say, no way, because we had a bad situation a few years ago, bad reaction. But, I mean, that's a fact. They do not confirm lifelong immunities when if your own immune system contracts the disease, typically you're immune for life is my understanding.
Thanks, Rory. Doctor?
You.
Yeah, let me tell you something, and that's exactly right. I mean, first of all, the question is, confers any immunity, let alone lifetime immunity? And their answer is always the same. What a great business. It reminds me of the commercial for one of the pizza houses. When you buy one, you get one free, and the Scoutmaster paid him for two of them. They gave him four. And when I started practice, it was one measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, then two, now three. And for the tetanus vaccine, now we're giving it to teenagers and adults. What a great business. Don't have to prove anything. You just keep giving it.
Rich, Salinas, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I have been, as we're so many reports about, because we're so many of us are refusing to take vaccines, that now they're talking about putting vaccines into our canned food to get it to us that way. Have you heard anything about that?
Oh, yeah. The most probably be at McDonald's. They're talking about putting the statin drug, Lipitor, into McDonald's hamburgers. I mean, and of course they'll do that. Rather than clean up the environment, that you can't eat that crap. You just can't eat that crap.
Is there any way to reverse the damage of mercury?
Really not, for all practicality. You know, it's like...
You mean I'm stuck?
Well, you know, it's... Thank the Lord is good, so most of us get away with it. That's
right.
The bottom line.
Dr. Eisenstein, thank you so much, and we hope you keep getting away with all of the things you're getting
thank
away with.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Be well.
All right. Thank you very much. Folks, this has been The Food Chain. We've been with Dr. Meyer Eisenstein, who is with the Chicago Home First Healthcare Service, and you. The question I'd like to leave you with today is, why do we have autism and they don't? What do you think? You can log on to forums@metrofarm.com and leave your comments there. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio on The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.